Start this recording and.
Recording in progress.
Today's Mishnah, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh in Masechet Taharot, is Perek Shlishi, Mishnah Aleph. So, continuing on our discussion, which so far has revolved around the Inyanim of some type. Some type of mashke. So we're talking about some cases in which we have a semi-mashke. And this comes up, by the way, all the time in Hilchos Shabbos, remember? Where you've got a piece of meat that's got some gelled fats on it. How do we view that? Do we view that as a liquid? Or do we view that as a solid in terms of heating up the meat on your plata? Anyway, the same question comes up in many different ways. Benogea, the concept of mashkin, or types of things that can gel. So let's say you have rotav, you have sauce of meat. And that is something that, of course, can gel if it cools, so then it congeals. Or you have grisim, maybe you've got a nice barley soup, you know, and the same thing happens to the soup if it gets cold. Or you've got chalav, which can gel. So bizman shein mashke tofeach, so long as they are tofeach. Now remember we had the machlokas before, whether benogea tyrus, tofeach means tofeach amenat lahatpiach, or tofeach means literally tofeach. To me, literally tofeach simply means that when you touch it, you feel the liquid, which then immediately evaporates on your finger, but you feel the actual liquidity. Tofeach amanat latfiach means that there's enough liquid on your finger that when you touch something else, you make it feel the liquid. So that's a machlokas, what level we're referring to over here, however we generally define the nature of tofeach. So many learn tofeach by definition means tofeach amanat latfiach. So anyway, as long as the mashke is tofeach, it's like any other mashke. If it touches tuma, what's the din? It becomes a tchila. Hare lo tchila, and it goes back to being a rishon. But what happens when you put it in the fridge? So now it's no longer mashkin. And what happens to the tuma when it's no longer mashkin? So then the din is that once you put it in the fridge and it gels, there's no longer mashke tofeach, then it magically becomes a sheni letuma. Because as it gels, the ochlin was in touch with the mashkin, which were tehila, right? So it doesn't magically all turn instantly into a solid. And therefore, you have solid food that has come into contact with mashkin. And the din is, remember, that ochlin are mekabel tuma without the shear of kibetza, and mashkin are metamin even bekolshein. That's very important to recall. So if mashkin are metamin bekolshein, so then that means that there's always going to be a little bit of mashkin till the last minute when we finish gelling it in the fridge, and therefore everything is going to be tummy. And even though the mashkin were less than a kibetza and so on, now, once they become solids, they were in touch with themselves in their previous kilgel, where they were liquid, and therefore they were metame themselves, so to speak, to become a sheni letuma. Now, how about if now I take them out of the fridge, and now they turn back into mashkin? What happens then? Can they magically become mashkin that are tame? So, chozru v'nimucho, and now they're no longer ochlin, now they're mashkin. So what would be the din? The din is, actually, that oichlin that become mashkin, and the same thing is true, really, if the mashkin become oichlin, they become something else. They're not tame because they once were tame. They're tame because they came into touch with something that is tame. So in the first case, where the mashkin became oichlin, theoretically, they're no longer the same entity. And therefore, they've lost their tuma. The thing is that the new entity that they are is mekabel tuma with less than a shear, And it came into contact with something that can be metame without any shear. So, of course, it's going to be mekabel tuma from a rishon, and eichlin that came into contact with the rishon becomes a sheni. But in the inverse, it's not so pashut. Because in the inverse, since we're talking about the new mashkin that appear out of nowhere, so to speak, because of the heat, that mashkin, if it doesn't touch a kebetza of eichlin, it's not going to become tame. So then it won't turn into a tchila, you see. So it depends how much there was of this stuff in the first place, because it's only going to be a kabel tuma if there was a kebetza initially. And there's enough to be metame, the little bit of mashka, the first drop of mashka that becomes liquefied after you take it out of the fridge. That first drop, if it touches a kebetza, is going to turn into a tchila again. And then the rest of the mashkin that now melts where there's no kebetza, doesn't matter. It's all going to become the kabel tuma from the mashkin themselves, which are a tchila. And since mashkin are always metami as a tchila, there's no rishon sheni v'shlishi with mashkin, the new mashkin will always be metami, any mashkin to come. So if the first drop is tame, forget it. You're talking about a tchila again. But now that means it depends on the size. So if they were chozer v'nimucho, then it would depend. If there was only a shear of a kebetza that was exactly a kebetza, then that means that the moment that it started to melt, it was less than a kebetza, because it was a precise betza at the time that it was in the fridge, which means that the first drop of mashkin is touching something that's not a kebetza. In which case, the first drop never became tummy, you see? And therefore, if it's, obviously if it's less than a kebetza, but if it's a precise betza, it's going to be tahor, because at the time that it's able to be metame, it's no longer a kebetza. And therefore, the mashkin will be completely tahor. But if there's slightly more than a kebetza, so you can get that first drop of mashka leaving a full kebetza behind, then it becomes, the first drop becomes already a rishain latuma, and therefore it's tome. Shekivan sheyatsa tipa rishana, the very first drop that came out, and it became tome, at that point, it became tome by touching the kebetza that was still left, because it was a kebetza and plus a mashu. And therefore, that first drop became tame, and therefore, it will now be metame any other mashkim afterwards, because mashkim, remember, always are metame, b'mashu, mittame, b'mashu, and they're always a rishon latuma. Wow. Perek Gimel Mishnah Beit.
The simon for this Mishnah is that measurements are egzak.
Okay, very sweet. All right, so we learned a number of very important things that we need to think, keep in mind in order to understand the rest of the parak. So first of all, we learned that the different phases of a particular material, so it could be a solid, it could be a liquid, are viewed lahalacha as being different materials completely. And therefore, you would actually lose the tuma by having a phase change, which is itself a very important thing to realize. We also learned, even though these are things we may have known before, Alon, will you please put your head in the middle of the circle? It's so disturbing. There we go. That's right. Exactly. Amazing. Now, I just want you to please, in the future, could you add some lights that are coming like beams from behind, just so that we get the full effect? I love it. No, it's really a brilliant design. We also learned that mashkin are mitamim, mittamim, b'mashahu. And we also learned an interesting thing that I didn't point out, but that we need to take into consideration, which is that even though it was mashkin that may have been part of the original amount, you know what? I'll wait to point that out in the next mishnah, because it's brought out much more powerfully. Rabbi Meir Omer, Hashemen techila la'olam. What does this mean? If oil congeals, then it does not lose its shame of a mashka. Interesting. So this is actually a big machlokas, what that means. So in the Pirush HaMishnayos, the Rambam, which doesn't stick with in the Mishnah Torah, so he's mefarish, there's always a certain amount of liquidity to congealed oil. It'll never be that you'll touch it and you're not going to get an oily finger. So that shows that it's essentially still a mashka, because it's really a gel, and a gel is not a full phase change. So this is how the Rambam explains it in the Pirush HaMishnayos. The Gra explains it this way. Many of the Mefarshei HaMishnah explain it this way, and so on. There are others, however, and that's the mashmos of the Braisa on the Mishnah, that what Rabbi Meir is saying is not that the oil itself is not considered to be a phase change to lose, to actually lose its shame oil. That's not the point. The point of Rabbi Meir is that in the event that oil congeals and then it heats again and turns back into oil, there it's considered to have not gone through a full phase change, in which case, now that it's back to being what it was, it didn't lose its tuma. That's the point. So that when it's back to being an actual mashkin, it's tameh because it was tameh before. So that all it would be saying, and this is the Rosh's approach, and this is the Rambam's approach in Mishnah Torah, that all it's saying is that it doesn't actually lose its tumas mashkin. It may not currently be a mashka that we can see, but it's not considered to be a full phase change. Okay. So this is, an interesting midway idea of something that is somewhat a mashka in the sense that it will still retain its mashka tuma when it comes back to being a mashka. Very different way of looking at the Mishnah. The Chachamim say that this unusual state is true about honey. This is referring to Dvash Dvorim, about bee honey. It also is not going to be viewed as a new material when it gets back to being liquefied, and therefore it would have the same halacha. And where you have a gush shel zeitim. So let's imagine a case like this. The same thing is true of congealed wine. Congealed wine is not really congealed, and it's a gel. And therefore, it has the same din as dvash and the same din as shemen. Now, let's imagine a case like this, where we also have a question of the first drop and what its din is. And here, we run into a different issue. It's a fascinating issue. You've got a gush shel zeitim. So you've got all of these olives that are stuck together, and that may be in the course of our getting them ready for pressing and so on. So you've got a gush shel zeitim, and they fall into an oven. Now, when you start heating the oven, oil starts coming out of what was previously a solid gush shel zeitim, which, of course, is part of the way that we process the olives and get them ready for squeezing. So over here, without realizing it, you turn on this oven, and now the oil starts pooling in the oven. So now what happens? So what happens over there is that kabeitza, if it was exactly a beitza mechuvan in the beginning, so it was precisely one kabeitza, and now it starts leaking oil.
How is Rebbe translating the bubsak?
Heat it. Okay. Yeah, you turn on the oven. And now it got hot, and the heat actually forced out some oil. So if initially there was precisely one beitza, so now the tanur itself is tar. Now we're talking about, remember, mashkim tameim can actually be metame a kli as well. And therefore, in this case, the ochlin that we have in it are not metame the kli, and the shemen that was yotze never became tame. Because at the time that the first drop of oil comes out, it was not makabel tuma from this kebetza. Ochlin are not metamin, as we said, pochas mi kebetza. But if it started off as a gush that was more than a kebetza, then the tanur is tamei, because given shiyatsa tipa rishona, it became tamei from the kibetza. And once it's tamei, everything else that comes out is going to be tamei, and even one drop of mashka tameim are part of the takona that mashkim tameim are metame kelim. You remember that we have two reasons that we were very machmer when it came to mashkim. One is that mashkim are alulim lekabel tuma, and that's why we want to be machmer, because it's so likely that it's going to be mekabel tuma. And then the way that we're machber on it to be a tchila is because since we have mashkim of body fluids that are common and they're going to be metame, so because of that, we were machber on mashka where it's also equivalent to the same type of thing that would be metame, the ochlin around you and the kalim around you. And this way people become more sensitive to the issue of spit or urine and so on. And therefore, we made this takana. So once we get that first drop of mashkin, it's going to also be metame a tanur, because the tanur is a klicheres. Now, suppose you didn't have a gush. Suppose you had a bunch of separate olives. They weren't all stuck together. Then I don't care how many there are. Even if you've got an entire sa'ah, or the girsa in the partanur, apparently was me'ah, afilei me'ah. You can have 100 olives, which, of course, is a very large shiur. I mean, even according to the Chazon Ish, 100 olives should be the size of a kezias, right? So 100 olives over here would certainly be more than a kibetza. Nonetheless, each one of those kezesim is certainly not the size of a kibetza. And no one of them was metame the oil. So then it's tohar, because how can they be mitztaref? Each one, a bit that comes out, is not going to be mitame from the olive that it came out of. Now, how about if you actually end up with a negia in all of them? How would that be possible? The oil starts to pool. So then if the oil starts to pool, then you've got a problem, as the Gra points out. Because remember, you can be nogea v'chezer v'nogea on a single thing. So let's say we had the case, you have one piece of meat, and you have a chatzi beitzer comes in touch with one part of the meat, and a chatzi beitzer comes in touch with the other part of the meat. You can have a kebeitzer that's mitztaref by virtue of the fact. Remember, this was the mission that we had in back in Eolais, that if you have a chatzi shir on one piece and a chatzi shir on the other piece, that it's still going to be mitztaref through the negia, or through it being in the oil. Part of it was in the oil, and part of it is negia and the chatzi shir. So they're mitztaref. So here we'd have to be talking about where you didn't have pooling of the oil. So the Gra explains that since the tanur was husak, it actually burns up the oil and it sizzles away as it comes out. And that's why the Mishnah doesn't talk about what would be the din if it came into contact with more than one zayit at a time. Now, there's another very important issue over here. And that important issue is actually not discussed in the Mishnah, but it is discussed in the Sugya and Psachim, where this question of Tumais and Tumais Eichlin, or Mashkin, remember, is a very major sugya in Psafim. So now the question over there is a big machlokas about whether Mashkin that are inside of an Eichel. Now, this is not the same case that we had before, where we have the entire Mashkin turning into an Ochlin through congealing. This is a different question. The olive includes the oil that's inside of the olive. As a matter of fact, the shear of the olive was built partially of mashkin. And the very fact, once it is, that you heat it and some of the oil came out, it's no longer kazayas, but that's because mashkin came out. So first of all, obviously, those mashkin are going to be mitztarif to the shear, always. So whenever we talk about ochel, we're talking about a peach that's the size that is able to be mitame. I mean, that peach, you could squeeze it down and get all of its juice out of it. It's not going to be the same shear. And we know, we've had Mishnayos. What happens if it was put into the sun and it dried out? Or if rain fell on it and it was tofeach? Those things are all part of the shear. Now the question is, how do we view those mashke? Are they actually a separate thing in the oichlin? Or are they actually balua in the oichlin, which is one shita? And if the mashkin are baluim, then they already were mekabel tumah, because they were part of what came into contact with the tumah. If they're mufkadim, and therefore they themselves don't come into contact with it, so then it would be true that the mashkin has not become tumah together with the oichel, and therefore we have to wait until we get the first drop in order for it to be mekabel tumah. So this entire Mishnah seems to be going only according to the Man d'Omar, who holds that mashkim are considered to be mufkadim and not muvlaim. That's a very important thing to consider. Because if we would paskin against that, as we'll see later, so then none of this would make any sense. These mashkin were tameim while they were already inside the zayas when it became tameh. Fine. So then if you're going to learn, this would be the way that it comes out in the Gemara over there, if you want to make this Mishnah work, according to the Man d'Omar, who holds that mashkin are considered to be baluim, then you have to understand that the case is that what happened is they were never mekabel tumah. It becomes a whole question over here whether we have to add a different point to the Mishnah, and that it's talking about that as an eichlin, they were never in contact with an av hatumah. In which case, the zesim and the mashka that are in the zesim are only going to be a sheni. That's how some are mefarish it. And others are mefarish that the issue over here has to do with whether there was a hechsher, and this mashka was necessary to be makshir lekabel tumah. Anyway, those are all things that the Gemara goes through. I just want to point out that the simple way that we've explained the Mishnah is according to the Man d'Omar who holds that mashkin are mufkadim, and that gives us a very straightforward approach to the Mishnah that we can stand by. Okay, Rabosai, that finishes our first two Mishnayos in Perek Gimel. We've learned a tremendous amount. Mashkin are actually mitstaref to the shear, even when they're inside of the zayit. We have a machlokas about whether they're able to be mekabel tumah as mashkin, even while they're inside of the zayit, which would only be possible if you hold that the mashkin are bluim, whereas our Mishnah is going on the idea of mashkin are mufkadim. And we also took into consideration of negeah v'chozer and negeah in terms of pooling at the bottom, which the Mishnah didn't talk about. And we also talked about full phase transitions and partial transitions, which you have a process of congealing, a gelling, which doesn't, on the one hand, it's not mevatel the tumah completely. On the other hand, it doesn't have an opportunity to be yotze until it's restored back to its original mashka. We also had the machlokas and the machlokas about that machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi and the Chachom Reb Shimon Ben Azariah, but what type of, not clear that's a machlokas b'chol, but we have items that are considered to never possibly, the way we explained and we said, the Gra explains here, the Rambam and the Pirush HaMishnayos, that there are those things that are possibly never considered bichlal to be solids, even when they are solid. And that, it makes a lot of sense. If you touch with your finger, you touch something that was oil, that was congealed, your finger's always oily, which is what Rabbi Meir is pointing out. Do I see a hand from a handy? Or it was just a thought of a hand from a handy?
I was curious, is congealing and freezing the same thing?
You mean, would they say that if it was frozen, it was also this? No, I don't think so. Not necessarily. We only talked about putting in the fridge now. I never talked about putting in the freezer. I wonder, we have to do a little bit of work, and they said maybe some experimentation. See what happens. All right, Rabbi Osai, it's been a lovely, wonderful beginning to the third parak with all types of... I find these things so exciting. I don't know why, but I'm really excited always by Tumba Vatira. So, okay, great. See you Bezrat Hashem tomorrow, and keep up the Bisarot Tovot. I know it takes a little bit of time to do that in Gav, but, you know, keep contributing happy things.
Recording stopped.